Hey, welcome to the Meat House. Jeff here.
Chris here.
Oh my gosh.
Cold, hot. What in the heck's going on?
Yeah, the weather do be like that. And it's the end of February, so I mean, it makes sense. The world is full of weird coincidences lately, I find.
Okay.
So last week, we had an interesting week.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Two weird coincidences came up. One was actually between when we recorded and while I was editing. Okay. I forget his last name, but there's a Polish gentleman by the name of Krzysztof. And I think I sent you his post. He shared a memory about 4 years ago when he made a durian mead.
Yes. Yes, you did. I remember that. That was just bizarre.
And
I'm sitting here. Did he not like the person he made it for or something?
I got more details.
Okay.
He says he put 22 pounds of durian into a 6-gallon batch.
Wow.
It's essentially the same format we were looking at.
Yeah.
It's like all prepared and frozen in little blocks.
Yeah.
And he said it tasted fantastic. And one of his friends was like, I remember that one. That was really good.
Okay.
So I don't know what biotransformation occurs in the whole like fermentation process here. But
yeah, we're going to do this, aren't we?
Maybe not immediately, but I think it's going to be one of those itches we're going to have to scratch at some point.
Yeah,
kind of like my coffee meat or your
banana fluffernutter
or the pumpkin pie
or the pumpkin pie. Yeah.
Yeah. No, we've each got our crosses to bear here, my friend.
Yeah.
So the other weird coincidence though, I think I told you about a channel I watch on YouTube sometimes called Weird Explorer or something like that.
Yeah, maybe that.
He travels around and samples different weird fruits.
Okay.
The most recent episode of his I saw, I think it's his most recent episode, I could be wrong, he was talking about that Mammy Sapote we had. And apparently we got a ripe one, because he had essentially the same impression of it that we did. It was more savory than sweet.
Yeah.
Kind of has a like a sweet potato with a little more flavor going on.
Yeah.
And he liked the fact that, you know, once you cut it in half and you get the little pit out, you got a little bowl to eat from.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was just fun to see, of all the weird random shit
that we just
have a coincidence.
Yeah. Awesome.
Within a week, hey, boom. Wild.
Yeah, that's really cool.
I appreciate those little
I really like, you know, I love the fact he liked the sweet potato, you know, flavor, but the durian one shocks me.
Mm-hmm.
When you told me, you showed me that, I'm just saying, holy cow, really? But it's my first impression when you gave that was, who did you not like to make that for? Because that was one of the most vile fruits I've ever had.
Well, and ostensibly, you know, fermenting it in your own house, you have to not like yourself to stomach the durian as well. Because
I didn't even think of that part.
We're talking at least 6 weeks of fermentation time, probably, if not, you know, 2 to 3 months.
That sounds like somebody needs to use that Quebec.
Kvike
for, yeah, get outside in a week
or two. Hope the neighbors don't call the police for a welfare check. I think someone died on Jeff's property.
or, you know, somebody got shot over near my place. Oh, wow. Yeah, that could happen. Oh, my gosh. Hey, everybody, welcome to the show.
Yeah, we hope you're having fun with this. And, guys, as usual, we're going to say thank you for tuning in, because I get to see these stats week after week, and I get to see the little the comments we get on our Facebook page or our email address. And it's just a ton of fun to get to interact with you guys and get your support, your commentary and things like that. It's a lot. We appreciate
it. And we really do. It's so good. And not just seeing you listen to the show, you're saying, oh, yeah, like 3 new listeners or 6 new listeners, whatever. But also the people who write into us, thank you.
Yeah.
This is grist for the mill. This is what we were trying to get for you guys. So if you want to know something, tell us.
The interaction is wonderful.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes. Reach out to us. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us at info@themeathouse.com. We should probably get to other places like Instagram or, you know, Blue Sky or something like that, just so that we have more ways for people to get in touch. But, I mean, you know.
That sounds like a lot of work.
I'm a working man. Yeah. I got stuff to do during the day. And yeah, it's.
And I'm writing books, man. of course, we have to thank Bacchus and Barleycorn.
Of course. They are with us again for 2026. We are excited as hell, because how many homebrew stores are you hearing about that are closing doors? One after another. And I think the fact that we get to work with them, that we get to work with a small business as opposed to a major business, and that we're offering a competitively priced product, not to mention just the enthusiasm, the expertise, the stuff you get along the way, that, you know, if you go to that certain mega online retailer owned by another Jeff with a similar haircut, you're not going to get people that really give a shit about fermentation the way Bacchus does. It's not the first time I've used that joke either.
I know, but it gets me every time.
It works. And when it works, it works.
All right, and the third thing I want to bring up here is we're coming right up on Valkyrie Horn.
Yes, we are. We are, I think, weeks away, not months away.
We're weeks away from Valkyrie Horn here. And my social media, would be, hey, just this last week, 2 years ago, you were at Valkyrie Horn in February. Mm-hmm. It was February, I found out.
Yep.
And so glad they moved it to March. It's just less problematic for weather.
1 month later makes a difference. Yeah. It really does.
But Valkyrie Horn, if you want to experience a mead competition from the inside, because it's really not a public show here. It's all judges, stewards, and a lot of fun.
Right. The closest you get to a public event is like the tasting event for people that are involved with the thing on the Friday night.
Yeah.
And if you're not like judging or stewarding or in some way involved with the competition, it's going to be weird for you to show up there a little bit.
Yeah.
Just a little bit.
Not that we won't share, but right. It's going to be odd.
Yeah. And honestly, what are you losing by showing up to steward a little bit?
Yeah. I mean, I'm the steward, and, you know, I've been asked if I'm going to become a judge, and I'm thinking about doing that. I'm thinking about starting the process maybe for, next year or so, because I'm having a horrible amount of fun, mm-hmm. horrible in the best possible way, just being a steward. I mean, just the people you deal with, people you talk to, you know, other stewards who enter bottles.
Right.
Like Tanner and his bottle's coming up pretty soon here, man.
Yeah, I think if we're going to honor the date, I think we need to wait at least one, if not two more weeks. I need to double check when in early March is on that bottle, because it's not right in front of me right now, but it's coming up. So Tanner probably in 2 weeks will be cracking that open and giving you our hints.
Yeah. So meat of the day is from Sap House.
Oh, before we get to that, we forgot something.
What did we forget?
The promo code for Bacchus and Barleycorn.
Wow, that's a fumble we've never made like that before.
We've not done that one before. We've screwed up a few times in a few different ways, but it's that's a first for us.
MHP10. If you go to Bacchus and Barleycorn online, make an order and use the promo code MHP10, you get 10% off, already great price.
Right. And that just lets them know that, you know, their contribution to us is being heard, being used. You get something out of that. They get something out of that. We get something out of that. Everybody wins there. So
there's no harm, no foul there.
Absolutely. So mead of the day.
Mead of the day.
This is the new release from Sap House. This was Could You Be Loved? This is a mango blossom honey, which is the first time I didn't even know like mango was a bee pollinated fruit.
Yeah, I knew that part, but I never heard of mango blossom honey before this bottle.
Granted, places where mangoes grow, probably a little hard to get honey from there. Honey is a heavy product. It probably, there's shipping costs involved.
Yeah.
This has been aged in an Amberana barrel for 3 months. And that Amberana is I don't know if it was actually oak or if it's a relative of oak, but it's that Brazilian type. And we tried a little at Sap House last year.
Yes, we did.
Not Sap House. We tried a little at Valkyrie's Horn last year.
Valkyrie's Horn.
But we were both a little taste blind after just judging
and
sampling for the weekend. Oh, my God.
It's so hard to taste the nuances when you've had 30 tastes. Mm-hmm.
And the nuances between, like, two different varieties of oak are a lot finer grain than, you know, even the nuance between, like, a raspberry and a blackberry. So it's tough.
Yeah.
But then we had another Sap House thing like months later that was aged on Amberana, and I recall liking it quite a bit. So I'm very curious as to what they've come up with here. And as you're getting this poured, you know, we're talking like a medium straw to medium amber, maybe a light amber, medium straw.
I call it light amber, but I'm not, you're the judge. I'm just trying to learn the ropes here, man.
I mean, the color is like the least of our worries here. It is very clear though. Yeah. And get a little mango.
Yeah, a mango on the nose there. Yeah.
Which is, oh, that's fun and interesting.
That's a really sweet mango fragrance, though.
Mm-hmm. You get some of the honey sweetness. It is more mango forward than honey forward.
I'm going to do it. And there's an underlying that could be the wood.
Yeah, it's not exactly spicy. It's not exactly woodsy, but it has a kind of an interesting little something going on.
Yeah.
It's not one or the other.
That's pleasant.
Yeah, it has a. I expected it sweeter, but it's Sap House. They do off drive really well.
That is an off dry, but it's got a definitive body of sweetness under there,
Yeah,
hitting the middle of the tongue for me.
the sweetness is not something I'm missing here. I just expected a little with a traditional. I expect a semi-sweet these days. And Sap House surprises me, and they do really nice off dries.
No.
I get the Amburana. I get a little bit of that mango blossom honey character. It doesn't exactly taste like a mango, but
Oh, no, it's it you, you there's it's a fruit but not a mango
it has
flavor.
a like if I go to the supermarket and I get like tropical punch flavor tropical fruit juice, that vague tropical fruit flavor is kind of what I'm getting here. It's not like a thing I put my finger on easily,
But
but
it's
it's
there.
there. And then my brain goes, oh, tropical fruit. And I know that's probably not incredibly helpful one way or the other or much at all, but it's that kind of a tropically fruitiness. There's a little bit of a weird aftertaste to me.
It's a little bit harsh, I grant there.
Kind of slightly bitter, and it's I don't think it's a yeast character. I'm wondering if it's not like the wood character or just something weird with the honey going on.
Not bad. I mean, per in my personal opinion, I think it would be a little bit better, a little bit sweeter.
I wouldn't mind a little sweeter in this case. That I think that would tone down that last little finishing something.
Yeah.
I still think this is a very nice mead.
It is a nice meat.
We are going to drink this mead.
Oh yeah, this is that's for
Come
our
on.
conclusion. I've had far worse meats than this, and I finished them. So no, this is good. This is a
Yes.
good one. Could you be loved? Sap House? That's a new one for me. And
Yeah, just the experience of drinking something made with mango blossom honey is new and fun for me,
yeah,
and I
that's
think this
great.
is why we grabbed it off the table, let's be honest.
When Jeff gets his subscription from Sap House, he's like, what is it, three or four bottles?
Four bottles, yeah.
Four bottles.
Four, usually four 375s, but sometimes they're extra generous and give me 750s, or they'll give me a couple 12-ounce cans. So yeah, no, it's
But when we went across the names list, we both said, yeah, that one.
yeah, that one.
Yeah,
That one. That
that
one. Foregone conclusion.
Yeah.
So, Chris,
Yeah.
our topic today, and there's a little bit of a weird one. This is a little bit of a we've talked to some extent
Yeah,
before
we've
about
touched on this subject several times before.
capsaicin.
Capsaicin, yeah.
We're not doing capsaicins like specifically because we have I have made my opinion stated many times, and I think you largely agreed with me that if you're going to make a good capsaicin, you really want a light burn to
Yeah, very.
that burn sensation.
Yeah, I cannot say lightly enough.
But
Yeah.
I when I'm doing a capsaicin, I'm not doing the prank your friends capsaicin. I'm doing the I'm going to make this as a an interesting little ancillary tertiary extra flavor at the end that just makes you go, huh, well, that's
Yeah,
interesting.
and that
And
and being as I don't like that kind of a hot burn, as culinarily speaking, I don't
right.
handle it well. All I taste is pain. I don't want to suffer from my foods or my drinks. But there are so many other things we can do that we've been looking at.
Right. Well, and I think the way I would categorize this topic is not a spicy character, but a more of like a mouthfeel sensation character.
Yes.
Because today we are talking about the burn.
The
We're
burn.
bringing the heat.
Yeah, we're bringing the heat on this one. Now, if you go into any Scoville chart and they'll give you the ancho or the sweet bell or the bottom of the rung, there's no virtually no capsaicin. All the way up to, oh my God, Pepper X, which is going to
Guys, why do you hate us? Stop.
yeah, why
Just
don't
stop.
why do you hate yourself? Don't stop. But if you're looking for a particular type of burn, that's a great thing to do. But I'm gonna touch so lightly on hot peppers. Because first couple of episodes we did, I hurt myself
Yeah.
really bad, and I didn't like
So hot peppers can be interesting. Let's preface this right now that aside from the heat,
it.
which I'm not going to call you a wussy pansy little boy,
I will. I'll call me one.
You're saying it, not me.
Yeah.
But you once, along with the heat, you get different like flavor character.
Yeah.
With those, a lot of the like the Scotch bonnets have kind of almost tropical fruity flavors.
And I'll be honest, I have had food, mm-hmm. but here it has a habanero glaze on this. I'm sitting here. I'm about to die, but I'm going to try it because they've offered it to me.
Right.
And they say, oh, don't worry, it's not hot. Whenever a says, gives me a hot pepper and says it's not hot, first thought, you're a liar. These people were not lying. It was a habanero glaze. Mm-hmm. It had zero heat. I could taste just, and it was, you're right.
Yeah.
It was tropical. It was nice. And I ate quite a bit of it,
right.
To be blunt.
You do it right, you get some really interesting extra flavors along with just the pepper heat. And unfortunately, a lot of people are growing more for the heat than anything else. But so many of these peppers, like Aleppo pepper, has a weird sun-dried tomato flavor to it.
I would like to try that.
Really pleasant.
Mm-hmm.
And it's generally, I mean, it's a little bit hotter than, if memory serves, it's a little hotter than like a jalapeno. But it's not like a Scotch bonnet scorching.
Yeah, but the difference between Scotch bonnet and a habanero is huge.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Huge. Hey, the difference between a habanero and a habanero, it can be massive, too. Those are, sometimes I'll go to, like, Jose Pepper's and do the stuffed jalapenos, and the jalapenos there are, like, it might as well be a bell pepper. And then sometimes it's like, oh, God.
If anybody out there grows peppers, they'll tell you, do not plant one pepper that's milder next to a nearby a pepper that's hotter. Cross-pollination will get you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And well, some pepper plants, the hotness depends on which part of the plant you picked off of.
Mm-hmm.
It can be that
item. I'm sure this is like a terroir situation like grapes, too. Like, you know, was it dry or wet that year? Was it hotter or colder than normal? Was the soil recently fertilized? Was there nitrogen fixatives in it? There's probably so many different factors involved with just like the amount of heat you get in the jalapeno, I have to imagine, because I've seen such a spectrum across the board of like, you know, You bite into a habanero or a Scotch bonnet, you're expecting heat.
Yeah.
It's not a surprise. The jalapenos, the easier going guys, it's a crapshoot.
Yeah, you don't know what you're getting until you got there.
But the other thing that I wanted to touch on with hot peppers, one of the things I like and think could be really interesting for me that I haven't seen tried very much, you go to a... like a Hispanic grocer or even just a larger grocery store in a predominantly Hispanic neighborhood, you got all kinds of dried peppers there.
Yeah.
More often than not, smoked peppers.
And
those smoked peppers.
The smoked peppers are different from the peppers. That smoke counts.
I think the smoke would add, you know, not just the heat, but an interesting other flavor.
Yeah, the smoky quality. And if you're a barbecue fan like I am,
mm-hmm.
smokiness counts. It is a flavor. It is not just a process.
Right. I think, I don't know if we mentioned it on air, but at one point, I want to say like more than a year ago now, I was smoking a turkey breast for like a Sunday dinner one time, and I had a acorn squash that I threw in on top of it, literally like the shelf above it with some honey and some brown sugar and the pecan smoke that I was using on the turkey.
Mm-hmm.
And turkey was nice. It got good reviews. My wife flipped over that acorn squash, and deservedly so.
Yeah.
Like she regularly requests I do that again because it something about a little smoke on a squash of all things.
Yeah. Huge difference. And, you know,
wow.
Run with, I mean, one of the first things I did with wine when Jeff was first teaching me was I did a grilled pineapple.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, the pineapple slices were charred.
Right.
And I still used, even with the char on there, and it made a difference.
You know, we should try that now that I've got a flat top griddle, too.
There's a thought.
Because we lost a couple of them pineapple slices in.
We did. Yeah. The coals got their tribute that day.
Right. Yeah. No. Fire gods must be paid.
Yes.
But with the flat top, there's so much more surface area there. We could get a lot more char on there.
Yeah.
Maybe like slow it down a little bit so you get that nice slow caramelization instead of just the char.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, God, we're just throwing ideas out. We barely cracked into this guy, right?
Yeah. So, yeah, but you know, peppers, and you know, and Jeff made a mead one time. He put a hot pepper in, mm-hmm. half of one for 2 hours.
Right.
And I could taste it. It wasn't, it was spicy, yes, but I had more flavor than spice, and I did enjoy that meat, which, again, surprised me.
Heat-wise, we were talking about, like, if you go to a Mexican restaurant and get somewhere between a mild and a medium salsa.
Yeah. I made it very clear I do not handle spicy well, and I'm not going to back off that, because it's absolutely true, but the flavors of the pepper came through very nicely and added just a hint of, oh, hey, hello, good morning.
Yeah, just a little something.
Yeah, we loved it.
Yeah, I think that is the approach you need to take with casserole. But there's also all kinds of other things that can throw in.
For heat.
Right, or heat-like sensations,
yeah.
Or weird sensations. And like one we've talked about before as well, it's ginger.
Ginger, yeah. You know, and I'm going to say this word now, the capsaicin in hot peppers. Remember the word capsaicin, because when we get to a later part of the show, that's going to matter.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now I'm going to go in ginger. Now, ginger is a warm, spicy flavor.
Yes.
And I have made lemon ginger mead.
Mm-hmm.
And ginger is powerful.
And the way you treat ginger can make a world of difference. I've done a little bit of research in the lead up to this, and it turns out the part of ginger that gives you that burn is less stable than capsaicin. So, for example, if you're going to put, like, you're going to grate some ginger and put it into a curry or something like that, the heating of that will change that gingerol molecule into zingerol or something like that. It's derived from another word for ginger.
Yeah.
And that's more of like a kind of a sweet, spicy, it gives more of the...
It does the same thing ginger does. Mm-hmm. When you heat it up, it reduces the spiciness.
Right.
And brings up the sweetness.
Yes.
Yes.
That's what's going on. The heat is doing that. It's kind of folding those proteins and changing it. On the other hand, when you dry it, then it turns from the gingerol to shogal, which is derived from the Japanese word for ginger. Incidentally, I'm a language nerd. Sorry.
Yep. I'm not mad about it. I enjoy every bit of it.
And for whatever reason, the potency of that is way higher than the gingerol is. Mm-hmm. Like as far as the amount of the substance it takes to make that burn noticeable, it's just that much more potent. It's not quite up to capsaicin level, but it's getting there. So to get the same kind of a burn with ginger, a dry, dehydrated ginger is probably the way to start with.
Yeah.
And
I will also tell you, if you grate the skin in with ginger, you'll have an earthy undertone with your ginger.
That makes sense. I mean, it's,
yeah.
Every like cooking thing I've seen people use ginger for, they, you know, you take a spoon and you scrape that off, but the skin has to have a flavor
coming. It does, but it's not. It tastes like ginger, but it's fuller, in my opinion, when I've tried it.
Well, it's, you're definitely getting different flavor components from the skin versus the inside of the root. So it makes sense that you're getting a broader flavor.
And if you can get the ginger, the green stalks, it's a milder form of ginger. When you cook it, it's sweeter.
Okay, good to know.
The entire ginger plant can be used. And all of it, the leaves, the stem, the root, everything tastes like ginger.
Yeah. And some of the research I did looking at this, I was seeing how people like, hey, I got a bunch of ginger for a good price at the store, so this is what I'm going to do for long-term storage. And they do take the, you know, they'll kind of like process it down to like little shavings that they can dry and grind into a powder to make the spicy ginger.
Yeah.
But a lot of the juice they get, I saw one girl take like, maybe a quart of the stuff on a pot and put brown sugar with it and then make like basically a ginger syrup.
That'd be so good.
And that sounds really nice.
That sounds really nice.
And then I got to thinking, what if we did that, but we did that with honey and we did a Boche ginger, and would that work? And I don't know.
Only one way to find out.
It seems like it might be worth a try.
Yeah, it might be worth a try. But so ginger. And what was the one we had? What was last week? I think it was last week. The dry one?
Galangal, yes.
Galangal. Another form of ginger, not the same.
Like a close cousin
of ginger. The close cousin of ginger. Yeah. I would love to see what that would do as opposed to a ginger. My son actually recommended that we take quart-sized containers and make like one with just rosemary, one with just clove, one with just ginger with the mead.
Yeah.
And just one with just cinnamon sticks and just see how it interacts with the mead, the same mead, across just with one change.
That's the kind of scientific experiment that is exactly, you know, the way you do that for a general kind of a investigation. So,
yeah,
I mean, we basically just need a big batch of mead and then we can do the flavoring step.
Secondary. Easy. And where can we get quart sized jars for fermentation?
Bacchus.
They've got them.
I mean, I happened, as a matter of fact, a couple weeks ago, I was getting ready to do another round of grain spawn for my mushrooms. And I have a bunch of plastic lids. I forget exactly what kind of plastic it is, but it's made specifically so that it can withstand very high temperature in my my pressure cooker for sterilization purposes. They're the regular size, quart-sized jar lids for like a ball of what you get at the supermarket. My dumb bug. I went to the supermarket and I got a flat of 12 quart-sized jars.
Okay.
And I brought them home and I started putting the brown rice that I was using as a grain spawn, because we're getting into spring.
Yeah.
It's about to be mushroom growing time.
It's about to start my garden again.
Well, that right-hand tree over here looking out my kitchen window, I kind of want to take like a bunch of mulch and do like wine cap mushrooms all up in that mulch and get that really inoculated and see if I can just get a consistent sprout of wine caps for the year. Because I hear those are a good hardiness for this area, and they'll pop relatively quickly, and they don't mind just wood mulch. So this seems like a good thing. Anyway,
give it a try.
I got three or four of those jars full of the brown rice that I'm using for my grain spawn. You know what I realized? My dumb butt bought the wide mouth jars instead of the regular mouth jars. So I had to go back to the store and get regular mouth jars. And now I've got 12 wide mouth jars.
Darn, I guess we're just going to have to see what we can do with those. The trials we go through, man.
It's
like you knew. You're prophetic.
Thank you for saying prophetic and not a very similar sound.
Well, yeah, I said prophetic. I meant that very sincerely.
Hey. Anyway. Yeah, that sounds like the kind of thing that, you know, we get a good, like, 6-gallon batch or something like that going. We could split that into all kinds of quart jars. Just a good, secondary edition of all kinds of fruits and spices. And if you guys want to see that, let us know.
We'll put it online.
We'll make this happen.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hell yeah.
Because, you know, the reason Jeff and I love this is because there's so much we can do. We just haven't found an upper limit of what the possibilities are.
And it seems like every rock we turn over finds two more rocks we should be looking under.
Yeah.
You know?
And I'm not mad about it. Just, you know, the only thing is I just don't have the ability to be in 25 places at once.
Right. So to some extent, that's why we love turning to you guys. Because, hey, you know, more hands make
More product.
Right.
It doesn't make the work less. It just makes more people doing more stuff.
Yeah. We get more people working on it. We get more end results and more data. And it's a lovely thing. But hey, above and beyond capsomel and ginger-like stuff like galangal, there's other stuff that gives us a burn flavor.
Black pepper.
Black pepper is so interesting to me because, like, it's black pepper. It's on the table at every restaurant you go to. And
at home and.
Right. And I don't know about, like, when you got taught cooking, but every time I go to cook something, what do you put on meat to season it?
Salt and pepper.
I'll throw garlic powder on there too, but salt and pepper is the win.
Yeah, those are the pepper is the master spice.
Mm-hmm.
Every chef will tell you that. The spicy component of black pepper is, and this is what I want to tell, the capsaicin for hot pepper. For black pepper, it's pepin.
Mm-hmm.
Very similar. It's considered a fast burn.
Right.
The hot peppers are slow burn. They're on and on and on and on. Mm-hmm. Pepin is a fast burn. It comes and goes like wasabi.
Right. It acts on the same flavor receptors that capsaicin does in your tongue, your taste buds. And does the same, like, reaction, essentially. But for whatever reason, that passes a lot more quickly. And it's also kind of like ginger. It's a little bit more not durable, I want to say. Part of the reason that pepper feels kind of plain to me mm-hmm. is that, you know, you go to a restaurant, you don't generally have a pepper grinder in front of you. You have ground pepper
yep. in a little container. Pre-ground pepper, and that's not the way to go.
And the pepping kind of just breaks down all by itself. I remember one time we did it was some kind of a game night, kind of a dinner party thing, and we just hit the city market, and I decided to do like a stuffed pepper thing. Mm-hmm. Not stuffed pepper, stuffed mushrooms.
Okay.
You take the cap out of just like the button mushroom or whatever.
Yeah.
And I used like, I think it was pork with, you know, garlic and salt and pepper, except I had fresh black pepper from the Hibachi Mart over at City Market.
Yeah, right? Yeah, yeah.
And I just did a real rough, like, I think I literally put it in a plastic bag and just pounded it with a heavy pan. Kind of a, not a grind, just a kind of good crack. Just
to break up.
Right. And then I topped it with like a slice of pear or apple or something, put it in the oven, baked that up. It was real nice.
Yeah, it would be really nice.
But a couple of my guests were like, they take a bite. Oh, that's kind of hot. Did you put pepper in this? Black pepper. Oh.
Yeah.
Fresh black pepper.
Yeah, fresh black pepper. I mean, it's the oil.
Yeah.
It's the oil in the pepper.
Well, and the pepping. It just breaks down fast.
Yeah, it does.
So, you know, if we're going to put that in a meat, if we're going to get that flavor, we have to be strategic.
Yeah. First, if at most, crack it. If not, leave it whole.
Leave it whole until right before you're going to do what you're going to do with it. Crack it roughly.
Yeah, just break it open.
Right. And personally, my thought, I think this is a good time to approach this with my buddy, the tincture. I think we take like Everclear or very high proof ethanol because it's the pepping is it doesn't break down in water very easily, but it gets absorbed easily in fat,
mm-hmm.
which means it's probably nonpolar, which means it would also get broken down easily in ethyl alcohol.
Yeah.
So yeah, let's get a very high proof. Let's get this guy just a rough crack and put it right in there, seal it up and let it sit.
Yeah.
And I think that is
in a bag. Again, I'm going to tell you this, in a bag, guys, because you don't want to fish them out later. You want to stop it when it's time to stop it.
And with the tincture, you can get away with leaving it in there because you could put it through a coffee filter before you put it in whatever. Yeah.
But if you're using the actual cracked corns,
mm-hmm.
always use, if you're using anything to flavor, always put it in a bag.
Doesn't hurt.
Yeah. And it saves you a lot of time.
So that's kind of how I would approach that, but you could also just put the freshly cracked corns in your meat and hope for the best, again, in a bag, because...
Why do you want to fish them out later?
Yeah, no, it's then you're just committing to more racking and more trying to make stuff work when you don't need to do that.
Yeah, save yourselves some effort, guys. But yeah, but black pepper, and there's also white pepper, which has roughly the same, almost the same flavor as black pepper,
mm-hmm.
and red pepper.
Pink peppercorns.
Pink yeah. peppercorns. You've got a variety here. You
long
know.
Peppercorns.
And yeah.
They have less pepping, but they have a weirder, different flavor profile that could be very pleasant here, too.
I actually have some of that at home.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking to try. But long pepper, yeah. I mean, I don't remember exactly. You know, if you can find it on mini spice shops.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And completely. And it's not pepper like you know black pepper. It's different. But it was once upon a time the pepper.
It was, as I understand it, was just easier to get.
Yeah.
And so it was the one to use. The black pepper has the preferred flavor. And now, you know, we have these different varieties of black pepper. Even you can say, oh, well, I only want to use telecherry black pepper because that's the best kind of black pepper. But yeah, no, for a long time, long pepper was the pepper to get because it was the one you could easily get through global trade when everything was shipped on ships.
Yeah.
And not that most stuff isn't these days, but
it's slightly different.
We have things like greenhouses and much larger cargo capacity and all kinds of stuff that makes us a little easier. Faster.
Personal life goal dream of mine to have an indoor greenhouse roughly the size of half a football field.
Only half?
It's a good start.
I mean, you only got so many hours in a day. That's all I'll let you pass.
I got kids.
The indentured servitude of life.
Yes. They won't agree. They will not agree.
Reminds me, I got to teach my kid how to work on my car so he can do it for me.
Yes. Oh, but yeah, but pepper in itself, you can, if you've never had fresh cracked pepper, what you've had is decoration on your meal for the most part because you just miss so much of the flavor.
Oh, yeah. The fresh cracked, like, you ever made a steak hot wolf?
Yes.
Fancy sounding, but basically, yeah, you just rough crack it. You get that really soaked onto the steak, and then you do a real, I like my steak medium rare, so I do like a couple minutes aside and put a little, you know, pan sauce on it. Oh my God, the pepper is gorgeous.
Yeah, and if you, with a rough cracked pepper, you can literally coat your entire steak in it.
Mm-hmm.
Brush it off at the end, because, you know, it's tough eating the pepper, I get it. The flavor's in. And you're good to go. It's hot. It's massively good.
Lovely. Pepper is one of those things that you grow up with a subpar variety that's just been sitting ground up already for months at a time, and you go, okay, well,
it's pepper.
It's nice. You don't realize the magnitude of what you can get from it, and that's sad.
And you'll use so much less pepper for the same effect.
Mm-hmm.
And or probably again more bigger effect than with dry pepper. Yep. So do it, guys. I mean, the reason that you see chefs with a grinder pepper, it matters.
Right. Yeah. That fresh cracked black pepper is such a good flavor, and it's, you know, it's not that hard to do at the end of the day. You just need a pepper grinder.
And now that we've talked about pepper, there's a recipe that I came across. My daughter was first starting her foray into being a chef.
Mm-hmm.
One of her co-working mentors, a man named Roberto Luna, Baker.
All right.
The guy was amazing. He made a poached pear pepper. It was actually a physical pear.
Okay.
Poached in a red wine.
Okay.
With black pepper. Slightly cracked black pepper.
Okay.
It was, and it was served on rosemary ice cream.
Huh.
It almost made, I cried. I cried just a little bit. My daughter was so proud. She didn't know I could enjoy food like that at that level. But it was that good.
It sounds so interesting. The different layers, the flavor going on there. Yeah. No. Yeah. And it's.
So a black pepper pear mead. Maybe with a little bit of rosemary.
It's doable. It's very doable. Okay, so we've covered three different things that we typically think of. Maybe black pepper we don't even normally typically think of, or that burn sensation. But there's other stuff that I love that has a kind of a burn, not necessarily like heat, but a kind of the sensation of heat, pain, kind of that.
Tingle, tingle.
Yeah, the tingle. One you already mentioned, wasabi.
Wasabi.
Wasabi is in there. Horseradishes.
Yeah, same family.
Very close cousins.
Yeah.
Or mustard is, again, it's very close cousins.
There. Yeah.
All of those are options. And apparently, in the United States, there are rules about like how you can extract the hot part of mustard.
I did not know that.
You cannot legally buy certain kinds of extracted mustard oil because it's considered, you know, think about mustard gas.
Okay, it's chemical warfare.
Right. It's and because it is considered, there is a possibility that, hey, you know, stuff could happen. So you can buy it as a massage oil, but it has to be labeled for external use only, not for
not for taking it in.
But there are some parts of the world, like I forget exactly where, that they use that as a cooking oil.
That would be amazing. I love mustard.
Yeah. And just the heat of a good, like, you dish on, or just like a rough stone ground mustard. Yeah, it's nice. And like a lot of parts of Europe I've been to, like, you get mustard at the store and you read the label, mustard with horseradish, without horseradish. I always choose with horseradish.
With horseradish.
It's not an overwhelming amount of horseradish, but it's a nice little, you know, if you're just, I lived in Europe in my 20s. And so it was more often than not, I was coming home from a bar or a nightclub sometime between 11 and 2 in the morning.
The days you'll ever remember.
I'm telling you a story about it right now.
Yeah, I know, I know.
And so I go to my fridge. I'm like, I'm kind of hungry. I didn't go past the Euro place, so now I need a late night snack. I've got sliced bread. I've got sliced cheese. I've got deli meat. And hey, a little mustard. That horseradish mustard makes just basic ham and some like white cheese. Really good.
Really good.
I mean, it hits the spot at 2 a.m. when you're still a little tipsy and you're tired and you just need something to tide you over until whenever you wake up the next morning. So,
yeah.
Big believer in it.
And here's, okay, something about wasabi. Mm-hmm. Wasabi in itself, it's a very expensive plant. You know, when you go to a Japanese restaurant and you get the wasabi thing for your sushi or whatever, it's horseradish.
Usually horseradish.
It's usually horseradish. Yeah. This is very high end. However, wasabi has two heat levels, one mild, one hot, in the same plant. The difference is if you grind the skin with the meat.
Huh.
That is the only difference. And the heat goes away, will denature after it's ground in 5 minutes. Use or lose it.
Right.
The flavor will disappear in 10 from the heat.
Well, and so
if you're going to use wasabi, use it fast, but I would recommend for meat in the first place.
Getting it into the meat also seems complicated because unlike what we were just talking about with the pepping, it tends to be water soluble as well as oil soluble.
Mm-hmm.
So if I were going to try a tincture with it, I would yield, or I would tend more towards like a neutral flavored vodka kind of a thing, like 40%, just to see what I get out of that.
But yeah.
I'm not sure even putting it in that tincture place is going to hold it because it is a volatile thing that breaks down so easily.
Right? Yeah.
So is it worth it? I don't know.
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But you're, because wasabi and horseradish are such close cousins, if you want that kind of burn, you can use actual horseradish.
Yes.
And you're going to get roughly the same thing.
And you're probably going to spend a lot less for it, too.
Oh, yeah.
But the idea of using whole mustard seeds also sounds interesting. If we can find a good flavor to go with it, you know? That's kind of where I go, well,
huh. A cheeseburger meat, no, thank you. I'll pass on that one.
No, I'll have a trad with my cheeseburger, thank you.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
But if you could find something to use with the mustard... I would talk to a chef, my daughter, or some other chef to what can you do?
Or we could go brush off the flavor Bible.
Then there's that too.
At this point, we are at the tail end of the episode. We were kind of like, hey, you know what else is weird?
Yeah.
Mustard and horseradish and wasabi. But you know what else is weird?
Yeah.
Buzz buttons.
Holy cow, I forgot about those things.
Uh-huh.
Those are so much fun.
And Szechuan pepper, which is not a pepper. It's not a black pepper. It's not a capsaicin pepper. It's like, it's a weird, like, the outer fruit part of a seed of some kind of scrub pine or something like that.
I didn't know that.
Grows in China. Yeah, no, it's
I,
not.
I had no idea about that.
The Szechuan pepper is not related to either of those, but it is kind of sort of in that same family as... like the buzz buttons in that it has it reacts with not only the taste receptors that make like hot pepper, capsaicin and stuff hot, but also the kind of the more of like the bitterness analog for stuff like menthol or like the cool sensation stuff too.
Yeah.
But it has that kind of weird numbing effect more than anything too. And yeah, that's
buzz buttons you can use. I don't know what it would do. That's the experiment right there. Because I've eaten buzz buttons.
Yeah.
And it's got that menthol cooling, hot, spicy.
And it's almost like an anesthetic or an analgesic kind of a thing where it numbs you out a little bit. Just a little bit.
Just
not for
bit.
Very long. But it's one of those flavor or like sensational things that's just like, oh, this is interesting.
Yeah.
And two minutes later, well, now it's gone.
And now it's gone.
Well, that was fun. Thanks, guys. But yeah, a buzz button.
Buzz button, that's got potential there.
If we can make it happen.
If we can make it happen. You know, this, you know, a lot of our stuff is if we can do this thing.
Right. And I feel like we've added like a half a page to our to brew list that's not even recalling stuff we were talking about before. And now, you know, okay, well, a pear and black pepper and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. And, but, you know, But, you know, and the first thing you mentioned was durian, is now that's on the table. And I didn't want it to be on the table because I tried the durian, but now it's on the table. All right, fine. Hey, thank you for joining us here on the Meat House today. We, as always, are having a lot of fun. We're just going to keep this up.
Cheers, buddy.
Jeff,
see you guys next week.